How do we go about exploring a planet like Mars? Well, it's pretty expensive. I mean, the Americans lost a mission to Mars, I think it was 1993. And it got all the way to Mars and then was never heard of again. And that cost $1 billion. So it's much cheaper if you don't have to do that, obviously. So there's another way to do it. You wait for Mars to come here. And some of you who've been following these stories perhaps know about the meteorite from Mars that caused a great deal of interest in 1996. The 6th of August 1996, the administrator of NASA held a press conference to talk about evidence of life on Mars that was found inside this meteorite. That's about the size of a potato. How do we know that a meteorite came from Mars? Well, there are about 7,500 known meteorites on Earth, and that have been found so far. A lot of them in Antarctica, by the way, because you can see black rocks on the ice fairly easily, and for other reasons as well. But 13 of those 7,500 have a very distinctive chemistry that's quite different from the chemistry of all the others, which have come from the asteroid belt and other places. And inside of one of them, one that's romantically called ETA 79001, I think, if I remember correctly, there are tiny amounts of gases preserved inside the minerals, and the composition of those gases exactly matches the composition of the atmosphere of Mars measured by the NASA Viking landers in 1976. And that, amongst other things, is the evidence that this class of 13 meteorites, in fact, came from Mars. So, on the 6th of August 1996, the administrator of NASA held a press conference to announce that inside this meteorite, in veins of limestone, in the meteorite, calcium carbonate and iron carbonate and other carbonates, there were objects like this. This is seen in an electron microscope at very high magnification. They look quite like those fossil bacteria I was showing you from North Pole in Western Australia. And also, there was carbon isotopic evidence and hydrocarbon evidence and other things that all reinforced each other to suggest to the scientists from the Johnson Space Center in Houston who worked on this and from Stanford University that this was evidence of life on Mars. This was the first, what they contended, convincing evidence of life anywhere else in the universe except here. So it made a big splash, and President Clinton said a few momentous words about it, and all the rest. It also happened that that month the NASA budget was going through Congress. Now, that's no reflection on the scientists who'd been involved, but does suggest a motive for the timing of the press conference. And there are some very lurid stories about the leak of information that forced the press conference before publication of this work in the journal Science. Interesting stories. Libelous if I say them now, probably. And there was a fairly small group of scientists who found this evidence convincing. All the people who worked on this meteorite were not paleontologists like myself, but had no experience of working on fossils. And so they hadn't made all the blunders, terrible blunders, that people like me have made in the past, trying to interpret these little things. And so, in my view, they made a momentous blunder. And none of these things they found were evidence of life. And now, 3 years later, after a huge amount of research on this meteorite, that's the general conclusion, that these objects are not evidence of life on Mars. So that was one strategy. You wait for life. You wait for Mars to come here, and you find it in the meteorites. Why bother to spend $1 billion sending a mission to Mars? However, it's harder than that, and it didn't work in the one example that's been tried. And they found other little funny structures in the meteorite. I won't talk about them now. I'm running out of time. So the only way to do it, in the opinion of most people, is to go to Mars, either with robots or with people. I think the people are going to have to go. But most of NASA, with the money, thinks that robots are the first thing to do, and that's what's happening now. There are robots on Mars now, and there are more on the way. And not only from NASA, there's a Japanese mission on the way, and there'll be a European Space Agency mission going, I think it's in 2001 that will launch. There are going to be, from NASA alone, two missions a year for the next... two missions every 2 years for the next decade if the funding continues the way it is now. And that two-year interval is the time when the planets Earth and Mars are in the right relative positions to have a minimum energy launch from Earth to get a vehicle to Mars in the briefest time. And so there are detailed plans for robotic missions for the next decade from NASA, European Space Agency, and Japan. Already, though, we know a lot about Mars from the missions of the 1960s and 70s. Nothing much happened in the 80s and early 90s because things were going wrong around the world. Things were going particularly wrong for NASA with space shuttle blowing up and things like that. So space exploration tended to have been in the doldrums in the 80s and early 90s. But the pace of exploration has now really heated up, and we're in the middle of a grand exploration program at the moment. But already we know that there are volcanoes on Mars. You can see three of them there. And we know that there's a giant rift valley, giant valley that's up to 12 kilometres deep and 5,000 kilometres long. It would stretch further than from Sydney to Perth and is, three or four times deeper than the Grand Canyon in Arizona. The point, we know that there was volcanism. Therefore, we know that there was volcanic heat, like there was on the early Earth, so we've got heat. Thinking about the universal tree of life and the significance of high-temperature organisms. We know there was water because there are river channels on Mars. For a long time, there was the debate whether they were made by water or perhaps something else like liquid carbon dioxide, but now it's agreed by nearly everyone that they were made by water. So we had heat, we had water. What we're looking at there is a landscape that's probably about 3,500 million years old. And we can talk about how to work that out later if somebody wants to ask. But that's just when we had the evidence of life on Earth that I've been showing to you. So much is known about Mars that there are maps of Mars. Very few places have been what are termed ground-truthed. No one's been there. And only four places have actually had any ground observations made on them. Two Viking landers in 1976. The two Viking landers and where the Pathfinder landed in 1997. So a few of these things have been checked out. Nonetheless, we have detailed maps of Mars. And so we're in a position to start predicting where to go on Mars to find evidence of life. Well, it was tried in 1976 by the Viking landers. And when they landed and turned on their cameras, that's what they found, a desert. And the temperature went down to as low as minus 80 degrees centigrade. You might think that that's particularly inhospitable. And they did, but you know, Antarctica has life even now. Not only people would go there, but there are microbes living there. That's a very barren place. But it could have life, could have had life, but all the experiments were negative. No life was found. Then Pathfinder, the NASA Pathfinder lander, arrived there in 1997. It was really a test of the technology as much as anything. It used a new entry system. It flew straight from here to there without going into orbit around Mars, got there, and then went straight in, bounced on airbags. I think it bounced, if I remember correctly, 15 times or something like that on its airbags, landed the right way up, deflated the airbags almost completely. They got stuck. So the little rover couldn't get off at first, and it took 2 or 3 days to actually retract the airbags so the rover could drive off. That little rover, called Sojourner, is 60 centimetres long. First rover on another planet, apart from the rovers that went to the moon back during the lunar program of the 1960s. But the moon's not a planet, so this is the first rover on another planet. And eventually they got the ramp down. The rover was able to drive off. Now, it had on board a camera, and it took lots of pictures, And there was a camera on the lander as well that took this picture of the rocky landscape, very much like that seen by the Viking landers in 1976. And the rover had a sort of X-ray analyzer on board, an alpha proton X-ray spectrometer, that could be used to analyze these rocks and learn what we could learn about the chemistry of the surface of Mars. And there were some surprises. And there's the rover up there, and it's got its alpha proton X-ray spectrometer stuck on the side of the rock, and it's going to stay there for 10 hours measuring the elemental composition of that rock. And it found that it has much more silica in it than had been predicted. For those, you know, some geology, it was found to be andesitic and not basaltic. That was a big surprise. And it also saw what there'd been some hints of in earlier missions, these white patches in the soil, which seemed to be some sort of crust that formed in the soil, suggestive of the movement of water through the soil, or regolith as it's called, to deposit minerals in the upper surface. So that's a really interesting thing, that maybe there's even been some water movement there recently. Now, remember I said at the beginning that Mars froze, say, 2.5 to 3 billion years ago. So all these water features had been thought to be older than that, and that the water had frozen onto the poles of Mars, or had sunk into the ground and frozen underground, or had actually been blown away by the solar wind because of the low gravity of Mars, and been blown away by the impact of meteorites. But there's now a hint that there has been some activity of water in much more recent times. And we've got enough information now to predict exactly where to go on Mars to look for evidence of life. And if you like to go onto the web, you can find something called the Mars Landing Site Catalogue, which is a sort of holiday catalogue for Mars. And in there you'll find 200 landing sites described, and about 50 of those are places for looking for life. And there are two very popular sorts of places to go to on Mars to look for life: former lakes and former hot springs. I'm a hot spring man myself, and I think that's the best place to go. But there are others out there who'd rather go somewhere else. Now, is it really going to happen? Well, it is happening with missions going right now, as I say. But most these are robotic missions. Most of us believe we won't get really good evidence of life until the rocks are brought back here and can be studied here on Earth. And then I personally believe that it's unlikely to be, there's unlikely to be conclusive evidence found until people go to Mars. And I'll get to that in a minute to finish off. But the planned sample return missions start in 2003. And it's quite a complex thing. There'll be a NASA mission launched with a large rocket in 2003. It will take a rover bigger than the Sojourner that went in 1997. And it will go to a site like this one and collect a few key sorts of rocks. It'll do some analyses on site to make sure it's collecting the best rocks. And it will put them in a cache, store them someplace. Then there'll be a French rocket, Ariane rocket, launched in 2005 with another rover and an Italian sample collection arm that will go to Mars. Another site, it will collect some more rocks, hopefully with fossils in them, store them in another cache. And meanwhile, a satellite return vehicle will have been put into orbit around Mars. The sample canisters will be launched from the surface of Mars. They'll rendezvous with the satellite system that's in orbit around Mars. All this stuff is possible with current technology. In fact, these are detailed missions that are planned and budgeted for already. And that vehicle that had been in orbit around Mars will then return to Earth, and just before it gets here, it will eject its canisters of samples. We're up to 2008 now. It takes that long to do the whole cycle of the mission. And those canisters will come towards Earth. The return vehicle will be deflected so it misses us. And the canisters will land somewhere, one place being considered as Lake Eyre. In those canisters, there will be about 0.5 kilogram of rock total. So Each blast-off rocket plus equipment will weigh about 2,000 tonnes. So about 4,000 tonnes will go out, and the end will have half a kilo of rock to look at. And the trick is to have the right half kilo. So that's what I do, is about helping people decide where to find the right half kilo of rocks to bring back. But as I say, I think in the end we'll have to go there ourselves. Okay. And I'd just like to say in conclusion that this is happening now. It's not all just idle speculation. It's truly happening now. And as I said at the outset, we've got a good chance to learn within the next 20 or 30 years whether there was life on Mars. There could still be life on Mars. It'll be microscopic if there is. And that will be our best chance within our lifetimes to discover whether there's life anywhere else in the universe. That's why I'm excited about it. But even apart from that, this is a great exploration program of looking at the rest of the solar system. When we learn a great deal from this sort of work, and what we learn applies to here, and there are all sorts of pragmatic reasons for doing these things, so as well as reasons of poetic and inspirational reasons for doing it, which interest me as well. So I think we're lucky to be alive and participating in these sorts of programs. And as Australians, I don't think we want to be left out. We're largely left out at the moment because of our own choices. But we can participate too, and I think we should. Thank you.